Well, here we are again. This is Bob Brundage, and today is November the 13th, 1996. And we've just enjoyed a very nice lunch with Ed and Joy Ruddy. We're in the big metropolis of Portland, Connecticut. And so, Ed, we're anxious to hear about your life and how you got into square dancing, what life was like before that. So take it off.
Okay. Square dancing was not the biggest thing in my life, you might like to know. And after I finished my military service, I was in the Air Force, went to college. I should say I got married and then went to college, that's the proper order.
Where were you born and brought up in?
I was born in Hartford, but I was brought up in Deep River. I
grew
up in
Deep River.
Actually, it was kind of interesting, I went down there to spend 2 weeks in the summer.
Yeah.
I left 17 years later.
Okay.
And I went into service right from there. But after college, we started raising a family and that sort of thing, and everybody does, getting established in a job. And we went to a couple of square dances. They used to have square dances in Middletown, down at the old Yacht Club. And these were barn dance types of things. And, I admit, the first impression I ever had of square dance, I went in and the guy was wearing a big belt and suspenders. Uh-huh. I think, man, this is a rough activity, you know.
Yes,
really worried about it losing his britches, but we had a good time. We really enjoyed it. All I had was a piano and a drum, and I can't remember if they had any other musical instrument at all, but the caller was good. We had a good time. A lot of swinging. Man, they swing, you know, for...
Sure.
64 beats and
oh, yeah.
Throw up and come back in and dance.
Okay.
But it was fantastic. And it wasn't until I started working. I worked for 13 years right here in Portland, and then I went to work for Stanley. And one of the guys in the company had just taken lessons from Dick Ledger on how to be a caller.
Okay.
And he wanted to get a class. So being right there close to him, we were captured and brought down to his basement to become part of his class. We had three couples, and Tom Jones, the guy's name was Tom Jones, Tom and Helene Jones,
okay.
His wife, if you remember him.
I can't say I do, I'm trying.
He had a couple of misfortunes. He couldn't carry a tune in the basket. He had no sense of rhythm, but he loved the activity, you know, and he didn't know a lot about it. But anyway, he taught the class, the square dance. We had six lessons. And on our graduation night, we went down to Guilford for our graduation. And if it hadn't been for a caller that was in the whole club that was so gracious and understanding, we wouldn't be dancing today. Because my friend Walt Dower's wife, something happened. He got hit in the nose with an elbow or something. And she was crying and ready to go home. And we just were not having a good time. But they made us enjoy it so much that we stuck to it. And although we weren't really affiliated with a big club, we danced everywhere in Connecticut. Every kind of an event you could think of, we went to weekends and so forth.
What year?
This was 62.
62.
Okay. And about a year after that, Middletown had an amateur night. Al Brozak used to mastermind these things, you know.
Yeah.
There was Walt Dower and I and a couple other guys. Cliff Broder was there.
All right.
And he brought the house down, you know, great singing voice. But anyway, we did our thing, and they applauded. And man, that's contagious stuff, I want to tell you, boy.
Sure did.
So based on that, Walt and I actually bought PAs. We bought a couple Bogans, DP-50 Bogans, and speakers, and the microphone, the whole schmear. And we were going to be calling callers. Well, you call for the wall for several years and get a chance to do anything else. And my first dances were somewhat less than roaring successes, I'll tell you. But eventually, over the years, I built up a following, and finally I got a club. The club had just decided to, it was actually a splintering effect. They divided the club, and having need of a caller, the people from Madison come up and they approached me to be their club caller. And of course, I was, you know, filled with joy. So
sure.
I took over and I caught them for 17 years.
Good.
That was basically my start, but I, you know, I've had an infinite amount of help from other callers, you know, like Dave Haas, for example. And what I used to do, I used to fly a lot. I belonged to a club, and I would fly Dave for some of these jobs.
Oh,
New York State or Maine or someplace.
Yeah.
And he let me call him. And that was my entree into these areas. Very effective. And
see, Dave didn't tell me he had a chauffeur.
A chauffeur, is that right? Oh, well, he should, yeah. Yeah. We flew a lot together.
Okay.
Quite often. It's a great way to get there.
I guess. I remember I had to, my father went away on a convention when I was home on the farm and calling actively. I had a job at Cape Cod, and I'm in Danbury, Connecticut. And he went away to a convention and left me, and I had to bring off a setting of baby chicks, and that was our business. And at a particular time, it was 8 o'clock the next morning after the dance, and the only way I could get to it was to hire a plane and go. And we did. We were put up overnight, flew back the next day. People took up a collection to offset the extra expense. You know, you don't make much money when you fly an airplane, you know, for a $50 job. But that's away from the point. Go ahead. So, where do we go from here, Ed?
Well, from here, I don't know. You know, I the activity has gone in so many different directions.
Yeah.
And it was such a simple activity when we began. When we first started, it was the only show in town.
Yeah.
There was, the VCR hadn't been developed yet, and television wasn't that widespread. There just wasn't that much for families to do other than square dancing, and it just exploded.
Yeah.
I can remember 40 square dances.
Sure.
Often. And it was just great.
Yeah.
Great activity.
Well, I know you've been very, very active in the Connecticut Callers Association, so tell us about, you've probably held every office twice.
I guess I have. Yeah, I've been president two or three times.
Yeah.
I was, treasurer and secretary, I guess I've done them all.
Yeah.
But it's a good group. And when I first started in that, it was interesting because Earl Johnston and Dick Jones, his wife, and a couple other biggies, as we call them, were at one of the Connecticut caller meetings.
Right.
And they were going to listen to us call and then evaluate us.
Okay.
Well, the first guy to get up to call, I'm not sure if he's still alive now, came from Clinton, and he was an older man. And he was so nervous, he had to hold the microphone. Well, he held it, and it just wobbled back and forth.
Right.
He said, if you think I'm nervous now, when I began, I had to hold it with both hands, you know. But we all did our bit. And typically, you know, I got up, and I promptly got all screwed up what I was trying to do. Got the dances all fouled up. Struggled my way through. Finally, very embarrassed, I sat down. And Dick Jones says, well, you got a great voice, Ed. nice touch. But it's been a long, long path, and I've enjoyed it. Square dancing has been a great thing to me. It's given me a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of friends. And, I like particularly the things we've done with weeks. You know, at campgrounds and weekends, give me a chance to really meet people.
Yeah.
To know. But it's a wonderful activity. And
one of the things that I know you've been heavily involved in the Connecticut Square Dance Festival,
mm-hmm.
and probably in New England too, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the last New England convention in our area was in Waterbury. 94, 95, and that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, of course, but I was the sound chairman, and which means, of course, that I had to put all the sound up in the different buildings.
Right.
And fortunately, we had a marvelous cooperation between the city of Waterbury. I would request brackets to be put on the wall, and they put them.
Yeah.
They make the shelves, and they mount the things. The only hard part was that we had to get up there on these things and mount the speakers and so
yeah.
forth. It's a little tricky getting up on these stands and doing that, but it worked out well. We had a good festival, although the festival attendance has dropped off some. I think ours is one of the best as far as overall pleasure of the dancer.
Yeah. I'm kind of a little worried about next year being way up in Bangor, Maine. And whether people will travel that far, you know, from southern Connecticut, for example. That's a long haul.
I think a lot of them did, though, last year. They had fair turnout.
Did they?
Yeah, and they're hoping to improve it this year.
Well, that's right. They've already had one.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. For the sake of the tape, it's the habit here in New England for the same town to have the convention up 2 years in a row, you know.
Well, they kind of get used to it the first year.
Yeah.
To right. find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Second year, it's a little easier.
Yes. And it does make it easier all the way around. I mean, to break in a new crew every year would be. And it's a big commitment, too. You stop and think of people committing themselves for 2 years. And of course, it takes 2 years to plan it.
That's right.
To get it off the ground. So.
That's right. We started well in advance. But you know, that, like many of these activities, that's a lot of fun, really, getting together. I meet with some of the people every once in a while. I'll meet one of the other chair people, and we'll mention the fact that, or question what we're doing now. We don't have all these meetings to go to. And even though it was a lot of work, of course, just attending the meetings takes time. It was still seeing these things develop and seeing everything fall into place.
Very
interesting. Nice experience.
Do you remember what the attendance was the second year in Waterbury? Roughly.
Boy.
Not important, really.
I want to say somewhere around 1,500.
Yeah.
1,570. I'm not sure. But the attendance was small, but we had, it was very pleasant. Everybody had a really great time.
Yeah. Right.
No serious complaints.
Well, the Connecticut Festival actually turns out a pretty good sized crowd, too.
Oh, yeah.
And that's every year, and it's held in different parts of Connecticut.
Yep. So, we would like very much to find one place to have it, like a university. Or,
right.
That would be the ideal situation, because going from town to town is a little difficult. But we found a couple towns that are very friendly towards us. We're going to be in Middletown next year again.
Okay.
This is the second time in Middletown.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of dance activities have been centered around Middletown. You remember?
Sure.
A lot of college started here. But we would like very much. We were looking at one of the state colleges down in, towards Danbury Way, Southern Connecticut. They've got a good campus down there, and it'd be much nicer if we didn't have to bus everybody.
Right.
Walk around.
Right. I know. I attended the last one in Middletown, the Connecticut Festival, before I moved to Albuquerque. It was a job.
Yeah.
It's tough for the program chairman too.
Oh,
how do you get from one hall? It takes 15 minutes by bus to get there. And they had the same problem in San Antonio this year in the National.
Oh, really?
One of the halls was a good 15 minutes after you got on the bus to go to. And the round dancers didn't like it because they were away from everything else, one thing or another.
Well, keeping everybody happy at these things is a bit of a problem.
Yeah. Next year's National in Orlando, Florida is all in one conference.
Oh, that's great. That's great. How would the sound? Of course, being sound chairman 1 year, I'm always particularly interested in how they work these things where they have two activities in the same hall, divided by a curtain.
Right.
Do they put the sound back to back?
You know, I don't really remember it. I remember one of the halls at San Antonio was in the back end of the cafeteria. the head out in the middle of a huge hall. And I walking through there, I could hear the call,
yep,
perfectly all right. But I don't know about that. Now we're just going to develop a new festival. Out there, they're calling it a mini national. But it's going to be in Denver in 1997, and they're calling it USA West.
Oh.
And it's a conglomerate of all the western states,
yeah,
you know, Utah and Colorado and California and Oregon and Washington, New Mexico, Arizona. And I guess, I don't know if Texas is in with that or not, but and they're just in the throes of figuring that out. And supposedly they've already checked the sound situation, and that they've got it licked.
So yeah,
it'll be interesting when I get there to see what it is, what that's all about. But look, I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
Oh, sure. Well, I just thought of something.
Okay.
One of the weekends we went on Let's Go Your Brand, and it was in the chicken coop. So we had a knot up in Massachusetts somewhere.
Okay.
And he did a workshop in the afternoon with some new call he was going to do.
Yeah.
And the thing I remember most was his use of the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I thought to myself, man, he practically swallowed that damn thing. But you know, that's the best way to use it, really.
Yeah, right.
So he, every caller I've ever watched, I picked up something. You know, I steal from everybody, you know, unabashedly. I don't care who they are.
Right.
But each guy has something to offer and is unique and less sure with something with that microphone.
Yeah.
He was soaking wet when he got through going.
Yeah, he was really put his heart and soul into it. That's for sure. Yeah, we sure do miss him. Who were some of the people? First of all, I know you and Dave Hess have conducted weekends together.
Yeah.
You work well together, too. I've attended one of them as a dancer, and I really enjoyed it. But so what's your experience along that line now?
Well, I work with Dave a lot. And, he has a week up in, or used to do a week up in Maine at Pat Mouspond. It was a whole week.
Right.
And the height of that experimentally went on for 17, 18 years.
Yeah.
We used to have 40 squares
mm-hmm.
for a whole week. The people were about 2 inches shorter on the Friday meeting.
Yeah.
Then we do a week up in East Hill Farm in New Hampshire. But Dave and I, I think the reason why we work so well together is because we disagree so often. We're always arguing about something. But out of this, you know, he's pretty productive kind of. He has a vast experience, and he's never unfailing in giving, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So all this time when you're square dancing, were you doing it full time now, or were you still working?
I'm still working. It was always a avocation with me. But it's the nice thing about it, when I retired, it gave me something to follow through with. It was a carry-through action that I was doing. I was doing it before, and I was doing it after, and it just continued on. That's the greatest thing that anybody can do.
Yeah.
Either dancing or calling aspect of it. That's one of the advantages, I think, of the whole activity.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things, too, Dave and I won a class, and of all people, the Al Brundage and Earl Johnson square dance class down in Virginia.
Okay.
And we drove down. We had such a marvelous time. But can you imagine? I think I was vice president at the time. I don't know what day was an officer in the call. And we won. It's, it looked so devious, you know.
Right.
Boy, but had a great time. Enjoyed the class. And got a lot out of it, didn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
I just thought of a question in the middle. Oh, you mentioned Stanley. Now, come to my mind, Stanley Tools?
Stanley Tools, yeah.
Because there is a Stanley Home Products.
Yeah, well, listen.
Yes.
Stanley Home Products, financially, is a little bit bigger than Stanley Tools.
Okay.
We're a Fortune 500, are a Fortune 500 company, but... I was the manager of engineering there for Cape Tools. I had charge of all the paperwork production.
Okay.
Or the engineering, the design of paperwork and stuff. And that's how this association began, really, with a square dancing. Well, Tom Jones. But it was, I retired from there in 88.
Okay.
And started doing a little bit more calling.
Yeah. So you're working pretty steady now. What's your schedule like now? How many classes or how many dances a week are you doing?
Well, sometimes I'm out 8 nights a week, but mostly I have one less class this year than I had last year. Last year I had 4 classes.
Okay.
This year I have 3, and one of those is a workshop. Some of the clubs are having difficulty getting students. Some are very healthy. There are good numbers of students, but 2 of my clubs had no luck at all in getting class this year.
Right.
Hard time.
What would you say is the average age of your dancers out in Albuquerque, for example? We're calling to almost entirely retirees.
Oh yeah, well, it's almost the same around here. I think the average age must be around 57, 58.
I see. You were a early member of Caller Lab.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, charter member.
Charter member, there you go.
I went out with Charlie Baldwin, and Charlie asked me to go out, and I remember Earl was there, I think Al.
Yeah, Al was there.
We all had it was quite an eye-opener, really, to find out that a lot of the callers who do this full-time were that vitally interested in the basic part of dancing. I kind of had the idea that they didn't really care as long as the dancers were there at their dances.
Right.
But they could see back then the need for making sure that this whole string of activity that resulted in their having the full dance hall kept going. You know?
Right.
It was a good session, I think.
Yeah. Any affiliation with ACA?
No. Although I might. I think it's got something to say.
Yeah. And I'm surprised that there are several people that are members of both Caller Lab and ACA, which is good. So what are some of the big events that you call for out of these local festivals?
I call it one national.
Okay.
Out of Anaheim. That was interesting.
Sure.
I call for most of the New England,
if
I can.
Yeah.
And the Connecticut Festival, I support those
very,
very much.
Yeah.
But other than that, I have called for, they have a Canadian festival up in Toronto. I've done that.
Uh-huh.
Flaming Leaves. Up in,
Flaming Leaves.
That's nice.
That's a nice festival. So, you haven't traveled internationally?
No,
some guys have, and I guess you haven't had the time to do any recording?
No, I haven't. The dancers, they're very loyal people,
right.
And they get very enthusiastic, and they want me to do that. I get more pressure from them than I do from anybody else. I've toyed with the idea, and I may want to do it.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it'll be good. I know you're one of my favorite callers. I really enjoy your tempo and timing. And I can't say the same about everybody, even those, some of those that I've interviewed, but that's another story sometime. Do you have any hobbies?
Oh, yeah, I have. Raft of hobbies, music.
Yeah.
Play a few things, piano. And
yeah, I see you have an organ here.
Organ,
yeah.
Ukulele and harmonica.
Ukulele?
Yeah. My instrument is trumpet, believe it or not.
Is that so?
That's a question.
Yeah.
But now I have a computer, or you can call it my $2,500 solitaire game.
Okay.
But I really do use it now a lot for email and
Yeah.
Getting on the net and contacting them. It's quite a what a layout of square dance activities on the net.
Right.
Photography.
Good.
I don't fly anymore, but I used to be.
What would you, let me throw you a small curve now. What do you think is the appeal? What do you find appealing about calling square dance?
Oh, man. Well, to be a caller, you got to have an ego, too.
Right.
The thing that's most satisfying to the ego is the appreciation of the dancer when you get all through the applause. I mentioned when I did my first performance in public at the amateur night, I got all through my scene call and they all applauded.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me like it was a standing O, you know.
Sure.
Well, I never forgot that. Yeah. And that is still, I think, one of the nicest things, the appreciation of the dancer for what you do. That is more to me than anything else.
Good. Did you come from a musical family?
Yeah, relatively, yeah. My mother played a ukulele and sang. And, but mostly I think my music is something that my grandfather was quite a musician. He was a fiddle player. He played fiddle for a small dance band one time.
Yeah.
A little bit of drum. And so I guess it's there somewhere. You know.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, we were talking a little bit about your military service. You were in the air transport.
No, it's
part
troop
of the
carriers.
Service.
Troop carriers.
Troop carriers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Drop paratroopers.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice, fun job.
Well, yeah.
Better than gliders.
Yeah. Well, it sure is. It sure is. You get back, you know, you don't
have one-way traffic.
Yeah, that's right.
It gets to you after a while.
That glider did.
Yeah.
Hard thing.
Well,
I understand.
Well, I wanted to ask most everybody I've talked to. I've asked for some sort of an overview. In your estimation, where do you think square dancing has been? Where do you think it is? And where do you think it might be going?
Well, it's been a very big part of my life and a lot of people. As I mentioned before, when it started, it was the only show in town. And as other things have come along to vie for the time, it's been very hard for us to keep the activity up at the level it was at one time. I think it's become overly complicated, for one thing, that we've kind of lost our original track of just supplying a really good time for people who only want to do it once in a while. The activities become very highly specialized, which may have taken people away from it. And we have not really kept up with the needs for proper public relations. We don't sell it the right way. I think we're going to have to go back basically to the beginning, shorter lessons, maybe rolling, rotating lessons and so forth to give people the opportunity to not have to commit so much time to getting into the act, start it. But it has a good future of people who get involved. But the thing that keeps me going, really, is the fact that when they do this, they take the lessons and they get going and say, why doesn't everybody want to do this?
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
That's what you can't seem to sell. You can't, you can package that, send out an envelope to everybody and open it up and boy, fun. Yeah. It would be great. But we haven't learned how to do that yet. It's something we have to do.
Right. What's your opinion of the CBP program, the Community Dance Program?
Oh, I think that's great. It's a great program. When I do fun nights, basically that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And if you take a bunch of people of all ages, for example, I just did a thing in New York for Girl Scouts with the dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically the CBP program, you know. But, you're getting all these people that come out and the fun night, but you expose them to square dance. You do a lot of other things. You know, you do reels and all everything else. Right. But at the same time, you expose them to spin. And they have such a tremendous time, and almost to a person, they will tell you at the end how much of a good time they had.
Right.
And I think that it's very important to make sure that first exposure they have is a good one. If we all go away feeling that it's something they enjoyed and they'd like to do again, if the caller can do that, we've got a chance maybe to build this back up again. If they're thinking sometime, if they see square dancing advertised and they remember back when they were involved in this program, some sort of fun night, it's a good experience, they'll want to try it again. But it may be, this community dance program may be the opening up, a reopening of the whole activity. We may have to go back to that and start all over again.
Right. Yeah. It just occurred to me, out in Albuquerque, there's quite a bit of discussion about costuming. What's the situation here? Are people still, after they've graduated and so forth, are they still coming in full square dance attire and with the petticoats and the whole thing? Or
yeah, they do pretty much. I think it's, I tell my dancers that when they go to blast off or the new dancer, new student dances, it's not necessarily for the men to buy square dance costume. The ladies who wear skirts, of course, but
yeah,
other than that, soft-soled shoes, long sleeve shirt, that's all, there's nothing special. When they graduate, then if they want to, it's an optional thing.
Right.
But I hate to see people who are, they don't have at least some of the Western dress. I think that's part, costume is part of the activity.
Yeah.
And whether the ladies like to wear prairie skirts or full slips and all that is immaterial, I think.
Yeah.
If there's some vestige of the idea that this is a basic American folk dance, you know, they wear something to indicate that. I think that's kind of important. Part of the theater, part of the show.
Okay. Well, of course, the dress manufacturers are concerned about this problem.
Oh,
and the square dance shop owners and so forth. But, well, I don't know. Have we exhausted our thoughts, Ed?
Just about, yeah.
All right.
You know, I think it's important for the caller always to be dressed properly.
Yeah. Right.
Very.
Yeah. You remember back when caller and I was first get, they made a stipulation that guys could not unbutton their shirt all the way.
To go down to the navel. Yeah,
yeah, right.